Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, hello, hello, hello. I'm Katie Thompson. Welcome to Katie Thompson Live. Boy, you know, that music is really something. Really a little crowded there going close to Holland Tunnel, so beware, drivers, beware. Anyway, we have a hot show for you today. As a matter of fact, we're going to be talking, first of all, to Dashan Farad, who is going to be doing a show joining the GoPro Radio Network organization, network, the whole thing. How are you?
I'm quite well.
Good, good. We're going to be talking about you to you in just a minute. My son Eric Payne is on his way in, and a lot of people are listening. We're going to be talking to Dr. Len Jeffries. Is he on the line? Is he on the line yet? He's supposed to be calling in, and he's on the line right now. He's on the line. Not right now.
All right, good evening.
Oh, here we are, waiting for Eric. Here's Eric. Dr. Len Jeffries, how are you? Dr. Blake Jeffries?
It's Wayne Gilman. How you doing, Kay?
Wayne Gilman, how are you? How are you?
All right. I'm sorry. I had to do this by phone tonight. I wanted to reach you, but I'm here.
Okay, that's great. Now, we're waiting for Dr. Jeffries to get on the phone also. Eric, this is Dashan Farad. He's doing a show here starting.
Nice to see you again.
Yeah. And Wayne Gilman is on the phone. This is our other partner here, the other co-host.
Okay.
He was a news director over there at WIBVOS.
Yeah.
Yeah, remember him?
Yeah, I remember the name, definitely.
Yeah, wow, he's not that old. Which
he oh, I know he's not.
Sorry,
still,
Wayne.
No, I still remember the name.
Gee, thanks, Kay.
You're welcome, you're welcome. But, Eric, you know, we're going to give Dashan a few minutes so he can talk about his show. Let us know.
Well, my show is called Worldwide with Dashan Farad.
Uh-huh.
It's scheduled to launch on July 2nd right here on the GoPro Radio Network at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. Well, my show we delve into issues affecting people of African descent across the globe. When I say African descent, those of us who would be considered black people, this will range from politics to international affairs to entertainment, sports, et cetera, politics. So we come in that Gil Noble, Tony Brown tradition, would, that Bill McCreary tradition. We promise to have very lively discussions. We'll be interviewing guests as well as doing stories on figures in our community throughout the diaspora.
Sounds good.
Sounds like a good show. That's a good tradition to follow. Tony Brown and Gil Noble, those are great. Great man, the late Gil Noble, certainly.
Yeah,
Gus Hennenberg. Ilan Bay Breath, who used to often be on your show, on WLIB Radio. So, you know, you're in that, my mother's in that tradition that you're talking about, Kate Thompson, WLIB. So you are carrying on the tradition as we should be, next generation. You know, Reverend Al is fond of saying nowadays on his MSNBC show that the civil rights movement is not over.
Yeah.
It's shifting into a new phase.
Right, a new phase of being sponsored by white corporations, but that's another story.
Yes, yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And what he's talking about, and what I was referring was that people talk about we were living in a post-racial thought when we got Obama in there. We're living in a, okay, we see that. We know we have a caller. Caller, you're on. Hold on for a second. let me just finish making this point. People talk about that we have a post-racial, and a lot of people are thinking that the civil rights era was over or to an end, and, but it's shifted into a new gear. And what I was referring to, and I think what Reverend Al was referring to, is that we have to continue the fight now with people trying to find new ways to cut back on voting rights in the various states. And like you said, corporate takeover of the election process.
And of the civil rights movement.
And with the civil rights movement as well. And that we maintain that. But it's a new type of movement now, so we have to maintain that we stay in control of it, as you're saying.
Yeah.
And make sure it's not just a kind of a commercial or anything like that. Definitely we don't want it to be taken over and co-opted by corporate interests.
DeShawn, we're going to be listening to you. What day do you want and what time?
We come on every Wednesday beginning July 2nd at 6 p.m. Eastern.
6 p.m. And the name of your show once again is?
Worldwide with DeShawn Farad.
All right. We're going to be listening in. As a matter of fact, we'll probably be seeing each other, you know, time and again.
Looking forward to it.
But right now, I know you're going to be leaving the studio right now. And Dr. Len Jeffries is on the line.
Yeah.
And Wayne Gilman is on the line. So we're going to be going right away to Dr. Jeffries. Len, are you there?
I am.
How are you?
Sister Kay Thompson. I'm
good.
Doing fine, you know, given the circumstance, the situation, and what we have to do to make things correct. So I'm hanging in there. The struggle continues.
Oh, boy, does it ever. You know, Dr. Len Jeffries, let me tell people a little bit about you, those who don't know. And, of course, since we broadcast globally, you know, maybe a few people, but you are the – are you still a professor of African Studies at CCMI?
I retired last year.
You did
retire. After 40 years, a great and mighty walk, like Dr. Clark would describe it.
Yeah.
And went to the University of New York, yes.
Yeah, and past president of the study of, what was that, classical African studies? Was that
Well, in order for us to put that African truth out there for the world, we created several organizations and institutions.
Yeah.
And one in 1969 with Dr. Clark was the African Heritage Studies Association.
Uh-huh.
And so he was the initial president. James Turner followed him, Ron Walters. And eventually I became the president of the African Heritage Studies Association, which was the vehicle to organize us to fight for our truth on who and what we are and what we have been on the world stage. And that was in the 70s. And then in the late 70s, we formed the National Council for Black Studies. And I was one of the founders and organizers of the National Council of Black Studies. In the 80s, we formed ASCAC, the Association for the Study of Classical African Civilizations, and that was our vehicle to mobilize scholars and teachers around the world to put that truth in the history. And I became the vice president and the president of that. And lately, in the 90s, 2000, we formed WADU, the World African Diaspora Union. And so I was the founding vice president. Our great leader, Dr. Ambassador Dudley Thompson, who died at 96, in fact. He was one of the great Pan-Africanists, a leader of Jamaica, the lawyer for Jomo Kenyatta. So when he passed on a year and a half ago, I became the president of WADU, the World African Diaspora Union. And so there's been an academic tradition of struggle and building institutions, and there's been an organizational tradition of putting these institutions in the world to help mobilize our families.
Yeah, yeah. And you've been doing this for quite a while. You know, we go back many, many, many years together.
Well, people don't realize we went back when we were really, you talk about young, gifted, and black.
Yeah.
That was the day. And
that was a hell of a year.
The Thompson sisters. And the Payne brothers, and the Jeffries brothers, and and Amiri Barak and his family was a
Dr.
part
Jeff-
of
Dr. Jeffries
growing
Eric
up. Yes,
this is Eric Payne. Last time I saw you was at my uncle's funeral.
Transition.
His transition. Absolutely. And you're from North.
And it was wonderful. And it was in one of the churches that family helped to establish Metropolitan.
Yeah,
and you're from Newark, New Jersey. I'm just saying that you're from the bricks, Newark, New Jersey. You know, I'm sure there's a lot of New Yorkers out there that want to claim you, but we got to let them know where you're really from.
That's true. I come from one of those villages in Newark that produced some very strong spirits and people that were ready to challenge the world and leave their mark. And so I'm very proud that out of Newark, New Jersey, and greater Newark, because you had East Orange and you had Montclair, came some very strong people who have followed a great tradition that we need to continue to expose, because it's part of our foundation and it's the continuity that young people need to understand.
Born
and raised in Newark on Central Avenue, and Barringer High School, was one of the leaders of Barringer, played baseball, even played tennis sax solo in the Blue Jackets.
I did that.
Yes. Huh? In other words, somehow my mother and the women who controlled our world when we were growing up, they wanted us to be multi-geniuses. I mean, my father was a Negro League baseball player, so he said, you got to play ball. And my mother said, you got to also have the music tradition. So I started on the sax. And then, of course, you had to be a student. You had to be successful. You had to make it. And that's the tradition of the Paines, the Jeffries, the Baracas. And that's a fantastic tradition in Newark that we need to raise up, the Thompsons and the rest of us.
Yes, absolutely. What I want to ask you what you think about, you know, today was the 50th anniversary of the March on Water, the Civil Rights Movement.
The Freedom Summer, I think. The Freedom Rides occurred in 61, 62, and then the Freedom Summer in 63. Uh-huh. And 64. And in 63, of course, you had the assassination of Robert Kennedy. And the struggles were heightening in the South and also spreading in the North. And so in 65, you had New York in 64 in terms of the urban disturbances and rebellion, Watts in 65, and in 66, you had the beginning of the Black Power conferences. And the one in 67 was in Newark, New Jersey.
At the Military Park Hotel. But wasn't there one on Rector Street at that building there?
Yes, it was organized out of Rector Street because that's where Dr. Nathan Wright, who's working with the Episcopal Church and their urban mission. And so he used that as the base to organize the Black Power Conference. And it was an enormous thing because it brought all of us together. It brought Adam Clayton Powell in from New York, in from Harlem. It brought Percy Sutton in. And so even an enormous female image of struggle in our community was brought in from Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a big incident where she stood up and she was tall. She is tall. She's alive and well now. She had a big afro, bigger than Angela Davis. And she challenged the men to go down to the North Jail and get those people who had been part of the rebellion out of the jail. And I was cringing because I said, oh, my goodness, I know those police are ready for something. And I said, I hope we don't run out of this hotel. And fortunately, somebody jumped up and said, no, that's not the moment. But the sister who jumped up and challenged us was Dr. Frances Cress Welsing.
Oh,
wow.
And she's been a great dealing with the mind of our people, because that's where the struggle really
is
and that's where the victory is the development of our minds and control over our minds. And she said that we've got to get control of our minds.
Yeah.
And that's been her stance. She's still in Washington, D.C.
That's what I wanted to know. She is, really.
She was at Howard for a time. Then she had her own practice. But she's been involved in all of the great movements and organizations. So struggle is the key. Frederick Douglass said it best. If there is no struggle, there is no progress.
That's true.
And that struggle can be a physical one, it can be a moral one, but it must be a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
Power can seize nothing without a demand. It never did. It never will.
Exactly.
Find out what any people will quietly submit to, and you have found out the exact measure of injustice and wrong which will be imposed upon them and will continue until they resist.
I tell you, I'm so fascinated. Good evening, Dr. Jeffries. Wayne Gilman here. It's been a long time since we've spoken, and it's good to hear your voice. And, as you recount history in this metropolitan area, you know, it's so important that people are reminded of where we've come from, you know.
That's right.
I remember
we learned
doing
to work together, even if we disagreed. Percy Sutton was a political leader as well as an economic leader.
Okay.
And Percy Sutton had this, he came out of San Antonio, Texas, but he had this love for our people. And he used to come to Newark practically every Sunday. And most people didn't realize he sat in the back of Metropolitan Baptist Church to give the new pastor, Reverend Jefferson, support. I mean, it was just, it's that type of relationship that we've got to appreciate and understand. And we are family, in spite of
right.
our differences.
Right.
And
Reverend Jeffries, Wayne, I just want to put a pause in it for a second so we can go for a break and come on the other side of the break. I want to thank the brother for coming in and listen to his show. Deshaun. Is it?
Yeah, Dashaun Farhad.
Dashaun Farhad show on here on the GoPro Radio Network. We'll be right back on the other side. Stay with us.
GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy, is starting off July with a whole new lineup on Wednesday with two new fireworks shows. Starting July 2nd at 4 p.m. Eastern, be ready, GoPros, to boost your confidence and accept the nerd within with cheerleader and founder of Nerdy Girl Wellness, Emile Lamont, with her new show, Nerdy Girl Wellness Hour. Next, at 5 p.m., enjoy the ride and experience history on the BCS Experience as host Byron C. Saunders discusses history, art, culture, and politics in review. Then at 6 p.m., Dashaun Farhad will be brightening up the world with his new show, Worldwide, as he delves into issues affecting blacks across the globe. Right after that, at 7 p.m., join journalist Earl Morgan on the Earl Morgan Hour as he spends the hour with good books, breaking news, and great guests. Then flying in at 8 p.m. with hot topics, fiery discussion, is Kay Thompson Live with the legendary radio host Kay Thompson of Inner City Broadcasting, WLIC, and her son, renowned actor Eric Kane, who starred in films such as Spike Lee's Do the Right Thing, Drop Squad, and many more. Then at 9 p.m., Cooking Things Up is Food Wrap, featuring Shauna Glover and Nina Markel. Talk never tastes so good when it's all about good eating, food in the news, and great recipes. After that, at 10 p.m., is the Sexy Party Show with the bad boy of dating, Mr. Lucario, of I Love New York fame, and his partners in crime, Miles Cunningham and pleasure expert Anita G. Last but not least, at 11 p.m. for the grand finale is Black Agenda TV Express, ending the fireworks with sought-out political commentator Glenn Ford, formerly of America's Forum. So listen to the voices in your head every Wednesday, starting July 2nd from 4 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern, only on the GoPro Radio Network. Go to www.goproradio.com. That's www.goproradio.com. Listen to the voices in your head.
GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network, listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back on the Kay Thompson Live show on the GoPro Radio Network. I'm the son, Eric Payne.
And I'm the mother of Eric Payne.
But what's your name? Would be
Kay
Thompson.
Thompson.
There you go. All right. We have Wayne Gilman and Dr. Leonard Jeffries on the line with us. And we were in the middle of Dr. Jeffries, I think you were giving us a little bit of history in the Newark area when I think you left off with Percy Sutton when he would come over to Newark and sit in the back of Metropolitan Church. And you were talking about the bridge.
Yeah, that's to personally give support to the new minister who was Reverend David Jefferson. And
yeah.
And the interesting thing was in the 60s when the Black Power movement had its one of its great moments in Newark in 67, and then the next year it was in Philadelphia in 68. But at that time, our greatest political figure was the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, Jr.
Mm-hmm.
And his base was in New York at Abyssinian Baptist Church, but he was bound to be the greatest of our congressmen, producing 67 major pieces of legislation when he got control of the committee dealing with education and labor and whatnot. So Adam came over to Newark, too, for the Black Power Conference.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to realize how pivotal it was for the link between Abyssinian Baptist Church, Adam and his political and cultural work and spiritual work, and him being a part of the new dimension of struggle in the 60s. And he was also a manifestation of the earlier dimension of struggle in the 50s when the new nations were being born. Egypt, the revolution in Egypt in 52, 53, Iran with Mossadegh and 54, Dien Bien Phu in Vietnam, and 55, you had this birth of these new nations, and you had what they call the Bandung Conference in Indonesia. And who was there to represent these new black nations and to participate with the Asian nations? Adam Clayton Powell.
Wow.
So we need to be able to see the historical links. That was 1955. 1956, the Sudan became independent. 1957, Ghana in West Africa became the first of the West African nations in the modern era to become independent. And who was there to celebrate the independence of Ghana? Kwame Nkrumah had gone to school at Lincoln University of Pennsylvania, so he had good contacts with black America. And at the independence celebration was Mordecai Johnson, the head of Howard University.
Yeah, wow.
Johnson, the head of Ebony. Adam Clayton Powell and others. Who was there? The best diplomat that we had who came out of Howard, and he was involved in the Palestinian, the birth of the struggle around Palestine. And who was there also were some of the of our key leaders. You wouldn't think that Martin Luther King was there at the independence of Ghana in 1957. But see, that's why we got to link these dots and not see the individual, but see the movement of our people and then see the need for us to move together and form organizations, institutions, and eventually lay the foundations for our global system, which will impact on each of us as individuals and families and communities. You have to have a systems analysis, and what I'm talking about now is a systems analysis, you know, that'll let us see the flow of things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're talking about
Dr. Jeffrey,
insight of what we have to do.
If I might, I hate to interrupt. You know, as you mentioned all this, I was just wondering if you could juxtapose what you think of today's movement, if there is one, compared to what we've been through in the 60s and 70s.
Yes, there is an enormous movement, but because our focus is a little off. It's an enormous movement, but like throughout our history, these are the worst of times because of the condition of our people. And so you can get blinded, and you can get devastated, and you can get funk in terms of your thinking. I call it a paralysis of analysis. But these are also the best of times because of what we can do, the potential we have. And based upon looking at our history and struggles that we waged and victories that we came through that were unbelievable, we can continue that process. So that's why I say systems analysis will allow us to understand how bad things are, but systems analysis in terms of our economics, politics, and culture, and those are the three dimensions of any system that have to work together, but systems analysis lets us know that we have an enormous potential. 1957, Ghana was the first of the West African nations, and then in 1958, you had 59, Guinea, 58 Guinea, and then 59 Cuba, and then 60 a dozen African nations birthed forth, and then in 63, 30 or so formed a union of African nations,
mm-hmm.
organization, the OAU, and
yeah.
today that organization is 50 plus African nations that come out of struggle and have found their independence. However, they are floundering in many cases because they don't have the systems analysis and system capability and system development approach to make it work. And that's the same thing with us.
Len, has that been because of their lack of unity?
No, it's been because someone else has controlled our mind.
Yeah.
We are the product of Dr. Wade Nobles, one of our great brothers. He's out on the West Coast. He has said that black people everywhere suffer from a shattered consciousness and a fractured identity.
Yeah.
Our consciousness has been messed with. We don't even know who we are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a planned process. And our identity, we identify with the wrong things.
Right.
And so, but there is a movement that's serious in terms of getting that consciousness straight, that we are African people. Oh, I'm not African. My students used to say, I'm not African. I'm from Jamaica. They're not talking about Jamaica in the islands. They're talking about Jamaica out there by Kennedy Airport. And, Jamaica, and my little Latino friends would say, I'm not African. I'm from the projects in the Bronx. I say that's a shattered consciousness. That's a faulty identity. You know, you got deep roots, and those deep roots have to do with our Africanness. And so there is a movement, serious movement, that's actually happening. But if you're not in the flow, you're just dealing with survival culture, and that's where they have
no, you know, but I want to say, I just want to beg to differ for a minute, Dr. Jeffries. There was a certain cohesiveness, a certain educational backdrop. And there was a beating of a drum during your period of time that everyone was in lockstep with one another
with different organizations.
I'm not saying these organizations don't exist today, but, you know, for some reason, you guys were warriors, like, very compelling, and I attribute a lot of why we're lost in the sauce today to the lack of media, lack of communication. What do you say to that?
I would say you hit the nail on the head when you're talking about the media, but it's not the lack of it. The media has been specifically engineered to further the confusion, to keep the consciousness shattered, and to make sure the identity is not what it should be. Fortunately for us, in the 50s and the 60s, even in the early 70s, when they showed, when the media just put the struggles before the world, that hastened our coming together. But we're under no illusions that there was a unity. It was profound, but that unity came out of people actually planning, people of different views and different circumstances. And mm-hmm. even at the Military Park Hotel, I was in the middle of guns at the elevator. Because the US group from Los Angeles, led by Dr. Milana Karanga, was coming up, and the Panthers were in back of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so when the elevator opened up, guns came out.
Mm.
Guns in front of me and guns in back of me. But luckily we were there. So there was no shooting.
Mm.
But we forged a unity out of diversity. And we forged a unity out of different perspectives. And there was a measure, and you're correct, there was a measure of controlling the image. Whoever controls the images controls the self-esteem, the self-respect, and the self-development.
Right.
And
right.
so the European system got together and said, we'll never give them the opportunity to feed on these images of struggle that came out of the Freedom Rides in 61 and 2 and the Freedom Summer in 64 and the other struggles, the urban rebellions and the Black Power movement. They said, and the Black Studies movement that emerged out of King's assassination. But we mm-hmm. had diversity and we had division, but we had a vision of coming together and forging that unity. King mm-hmm. was not at one with those young men. He
right.
went down there to try to calm them down and during the Freedom Ride period. and they wanted him to continue the ride. They just had a TV showing of the new work done by this black producer-director, and continue on the ride to the South. He said, no, I got other things to do. And so, but King was willing to be with them in struggle, but he knew that if anybody was going to be killed in the struggle, others would have been incidentally. He would have been purposely mm-hmm. devastated, as he was a few years later.
I see. Mm. Let's put a pause right there, because we have to go for a break with Wayne Gilman, Dr. Leonard Jeffries, Kate Thompson on the Kate Thompson Live Show. My name is Eric Payne. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a great opportunity. If you have a product or a service, a talent or something important to say, now is your chance to have your very own radio show. Whether you're just starting out, a veteran looking for a professional platform to enhance your presentation, the GoPro Radio Network is the premier place to cultivate and share new and exciting content. We'll help you to grow your audience and keep it growing long after your first broadcast. Now you have a voice. Call 212-696-8562 today or visit www.goproradio.com and you'll be amazed at how easy and affordable it is to have your very own show on the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
You want to know the truth, folks? Do you really want to know the truth? Well, perhaps you can't handle the truth. But if you can, you can listen to GoPro Radio. Tune in at www.goproradio.com. Now, have I made myself clear?
GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head. I know I do.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back on the Kate Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network. I'm Eric Payne, the co-host. My mom, Kate Thompson, is here. And we have also Wayne Gilman and Dr. Leonard Jeffries. Dr. Jeffries, now, you talked about, you know, the image and who the media controlling the images. I wanted you to talk about how the images were controlled back when the Central Park Jogger right. case came out, and how the media, you know, they kind of did a job on our people, and how there seems to be, you know, that's systematic in this country, how that's an attack in creating a negative image of African Americans, particularly the African-American man. But I want you to talk about, give us your thoughts on the Central Park Jogger
well,
case.
Well, that's an excellent,
recent.
Right. That's an excellent example of what we're trying to deal with. Whoever controls the images controls the self-esteem, the self-respect, and the self-development. Mm-hmm. And that's why I fought so hard for changing the curriculum and putting in place a curriculum of inclusion that included African peoples, Asian, Native American peoples. But the Central Park case of the young men being rounded up, and there were many of them, and they finally narrowed them down to a few that they specifically targeted because somebody had to pay for this crime that was created. Mm-hmm. But that which happened to those young men came out of the nation's fear of the explosion of black people in the urban areas and also in the rural areas in the South. And so you developed a war against black people, particularly against black youth. Mm-hmm. And so after the Watts Rebellion, they had the McCone Report, and I believe he was the head of the CIA, and it concluded, after they did their analyses, that the dynamite in the urban areas were these black youth, and particularly the black youth between 15 and 25. And so the solution was not to work with the anger and circumstances of the black youth, but to see them as the enemy and devastate the enemy so that you had black youth creamed at the top, and they were taken into the white institutions. A group of black youth were pulled into the Vietnam War at numbers that had not were disproportional. Black youth were being pulled into the drug situation and circumstances planned and put into our community, and then black youth pulled into the jail. So what happened with the Central Park was a continuation of COINTELPRO, that was a government program to create havoc among us. The benign neglect, which was a government policy of ignoring black people and their circumstances and their needs, a purposeful attack which has produced a new type of slavery, and our beautiful sister Michelle Alexander has written about it in her book, The New Jim Crow. There are millions of black people now, particularly the young men, caught up in the prison system. Mm-hmm. And so and even at this particular point, there's no post-racial nothing. It's still the same institutionalized racism in different form. So the Central Park jogger case is the excellent example of rounding up black kids, targeting them for destruction, and then going through with it and putting them in jail for a couple of them for more than a decade, and then refusing to accept the reality that the person who was responsible admitted it, and they still did not, because they had wanted to stamp the black youth with such a devastating mark on them, and they had done it. Trump had called for them virtually to be eliminated without even a trial, a full-page article by Donald Trump. And so these strange things he's been doing over the years, we should have realized that's a part of his persona, because he did it during the Central Park jogger situation. But luckily there were lawyers that stayed on the case. Luckily there were families that stayed with those young men. Luckily there were institutions that kept them together. And those seven were the ones that finally got down to trial. But Altomatics, Attorney Altomatics, was so strong in his presentation that the person he represented got off. And there were two that were out of the picture, so the seven became the five. But it's a perfect example of targeting our youth, having the image of them not being successful and being predators, and having this process of wilding. White folks have wilding. You go to any football game, go to any soccer game, go to any sports, go to any hockey game, you'll see white folks going wild.
They created
that label was
they
specifically placed on black youth.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, also, when, you know, these kids, you know, they had the person, you know, the police department, I understand, through a very good friend of mine, Anna Phillips, who used to be with either CBS or ABC, because she was the one reporter that was telling the truth about this, because they did have the person who raped the lady in Central Park. Mm-hmm. They had him, you know, he had confessed to it.
Mm-hmm.
But still they went on with this frenzy, you know, with this actually tracking down, you know, these kids and whatnot. And here they are, and they're talking about 40 million. That's why I said in the thing that we wrote, that 40 million is not enough.
Right.
Okay.
It's not enough, and it's
going to
be contested. There's going to be lawsuits. They're going to drag it out. Yeah. Just like when I won my enormous case challenging them in terms of the freedom to teach the truth to our youngsters. And I won a case in the federal court, and we got a $400,000 award.
When was that?
Curriculum of Inclusion struggle was in 1990. That's when we came up with an evaluation of the state of New York educational system. We were asked to be a consultant with this committee to evaluate New York, and I was the chief consultant of four people. And we looked at 150 documents of the state of New York. We concluded that education in New York was a curriculum of exclusion, and black people, Native Americans, Asians, Latinos were excluded. And what we needed was a curriculum of inclusion. And so that's what we call for. But when we raise these issues, the enemies who didn't want this to occur, they said, we've got to figure out how to demonize this struggle. And so they came up with this process of making me the new Hitler and demonizing me and to scare away any changes in the curriculum. But unfortunately, we fought them toe-to-toe. We took them to court. We won in the court. But they were able to come up with legal delays and legal things, so that by the time we got down to it, we didn't get any money, but our legal fees were paid. But we weren't in it for money. We said we're suing them for millions of dollars just to make a point.
Yes,
but they had to put
a lot
me back in place as chair of the Black Studies at City College. And I traveled around the world, at least 200 cities in America and another 100 throughout the world, raising this truth. And so, but we have to understand the images are so important. It was so important to attack me as the worst person since Hitler. And if I wasn't me and I didn't have the support that I had, I didn't grow up the way I had, I would have submitted or, been crushed. But instead, we got stronger. The struggle properly understood makes you stronger.
And the struggle continues.
Let me ask you, Dr. Jeffries, you know, you talked about images and the imaging and, me being on the entertainment side, so to speak, working with Spike Lee and things like that along, We're very aware of the images. And being a young man, young boy growing up, as someone who went into that business, who understood the images, it's very interesting. When you work within that system, that Hollywood system, you see how it's an extension of those attacks on our people. And I noticed how some of the imaging of black men, black people in general, anybody that's non-white really is as an appendage or as a servant. Years ago used to be a servant to white people. Mm-hmm. And so as you think about these images, you got to kind of choose the things you want to do. If you want to be a strong African-American man, strong African-American woman, and succeed in a business of entertainment and presenting images, you have to choose the images that you want to portray because, there's a temptation, like a lot of our people go through, when employment comes in and survival. You said the politics, I think you mentioned the phrase, the politics, economics of survival.
Survival culture. That's where
survival
they lock
culture.
Us in. And we really need to move to developmental culture.
Exactly.
But you're right, there are obstacles. If you don't do the right thing, you're not going to get the right job. And you thought you were doing the right thing, but they said, no, we don't want this image of the black soldier fighting in the wars of America.
Right.
Or a black woman like Harriet Tubman who freed herself and then had a greater mission and went back again and again and again and again and again. You know, they don't want that image. Or King, they got him dreaming on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial. The man gave his life. You don't kill dreamers. He had a plan, a program to move us to higher levels. But again, he's been packaged even by his friends and associates to raise money around the dream. We don't have a dream. We have a struggle.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real struggle. And if we don't understand it fully, we're going to be crushed.
Mm-hmm. And we need to understand, like you said, the systems that go into remaking your image and building your image. Unfortunately, what happens is that the economics or the politics of survival, particularly in the music industry, sometimes I think of some of the imaging that comes across that gets sold by the bigger record companies.
That's right.
It's interesting.
In the 60s, we had the images, but the 60s and had the music and the entertainment, but there was a message in the music.
Yeah.
I mean, the Temptations and all of them. Marvin Gaye. I mean, even before that, we were talking about Earth Angel. I remember we were growing up and you had Earth Angel. And we weren't talking about B's and H's in terms of our women.
Right.
So there was a message in the music, and that message was turned around for something else financial, and people knew what they were doing, and we got to resist it.
Exactly. We have another caller on the line. It's a 908 number. Caller, do you have a question for Dr. Jeffries? Anybody in the panel?
Hi, Kay and Eric and everyone. This is Keisha.
Hey, Keisha. How you doing?
How you doing? Okay. I'm just, I was just listening in to, and like you guys were saying, it's the image. And for perfect example, my youngest daughter, she's wanting to get tattoos and piercings. And my house rule is until you're 18 and you pay for it yourself. But right now, while you're still in school and you're trying to go to college or even into the military, they look at all this stuff.
Right.
They don't want to see all these tattoos on the left side of your body and piercings on the right. I mean, it's the image that the some of the entertainers, like these rappers, are giving our young people. On
and the sports figures, yes.
Exactly.
So you're right. I'm glad you have the strength to put your foot down and tell her that even after she gets on her own, this stuff is dangerous for your health. It's dangerous for your mental health. It's dangerous for your physical health. And it's a go along with the show. And instead of her being a leader and showing the beauty of our people, we have natural beauty. We're black and beautiful, no matter what shade of blackness you are. So you've got to work against this prostitution of a woman. I still have, a few weeks ago in my mind, a full-page image in one of the New York papers of Rihanna. Here's a woman who's had natural beauty, natural talent, but the whole image, a full page, was showing her wearing a dress that swung down her back across her behind to show the crack in her body. I said, this is ridiculous. Yeah. Where was her mother? Where was her friends? Where was her, she's beautiful if she wore a blanket.
Right.
So
someone has
told her this is what you have to do if you want to be a superstar.
That's right. And that's a good punctuation. I'm going to put a punctuation just to hold on for a brief second. We've got to go for a quick break. We'll be back on the other side on the Kay Thompson Live Show.
Stay with us, Akeisha.
The views and opinions expressed on GoPro Radio Network shows are solely those of the speakers and are not necessarily the views or opinions of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. or its affiliates. These broadcasts are provided on the understanding that they do not constitute professional advice or services. Individuals who speak in these broadcasts express their own opinions, experiences, and conclusions. GoPro Radio Networks and its affiliates do not necessarily endorse or oppose any particular opinion or conclusion discussed in these broadcasts. You may not edit, modify, or redistribute these broadcasts in any way without the express permission of GoPro Radio Networks, Inc. GoPro Radio Networks assumes no liability for any of your activities in connection with these broadcasts or for your use of these broadcasts in connection with your website, computer, or playing device.
You're listening to content developed by the GoPro Radio Network, the fastest growing network in the galaxy. GoPro Radio Network. Listen to the voices in your head.
And we're back on the Kay Thompson Live Show. I'm Eric Payne. That's Kay Thompson. We have Dr. Leonard Jeffries and Wayne Gilman on the phone with us.
Yeah.
And we also have Keisha, one of our callers in. But you talked about Dr. Jeffries and the images that are going on, particularly with Rihanna, and you're exactly right. It seems as though, and I've definitely seen it from the other aspect, from the other end of the business, what you have, the type of images that they want you to put out there. And even women and our stars that get that big, you know, it's at what cost are you willing to achieve that?
Yeah.
And what part of your soul are you willing to give up? Because in the final analysis, it's what are you sacrificing?
Exactly.
And the image that you're sending out to your people.
And what I want to say, this is Keisha Peterson who called, and she has written a book. Now, she talked about her daughter and that she's written a book. She, meaning Keisha, our caller, the name of the book is, it's a very small book, but it has a definite message for young people, knowing when enough is enough. Mm-hmm. And it's your guide or her guide to building self-esteem.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're going to be having her on. So thanks for participating, Keisha. You know, we'll be talking to you at another time. So, you know, really thank you for calling in. Now, we want to go to Dr. Jeffries, because the fact that Anna Phillips, you know, I don't know if you remember Anna Phillips, Dr. Jeffries, Len. She worked for either ABC or CBS. She was the one black reporter, you know, that really got under the skin of the NYPD because she was there.
Right.
She talked to the parents, and she was, you know, helping. And, you know, she had, quite a lot to say about the about what the NYPD was doing to these kids and why they did it, because she absolutely knew the name of the person who had, had committed the crime. As a matter of fact, she talked to him. And we're going to be having her on the show, you know, probably within the next couple of weeks, so she can tell her story. She has some inside information that she has not revealed up to this particular point about this. But we certainly wish these young men well They deserve so much, and it's just
and they need help
to them.
To restore
them.
They just can't be when you're damaged with the prison experience and the rest of it. They need help to come back, and so we need to support them.
Their lives are stolen. Yeah.
And then also we need to remember when we're talking about consciousness and beauty and giving our people strength, particularly our young ladies, we have to give thanks that there were some people in our experience called the Thompson sisters, and they had their dance studio, and they had their beauty systems, and they had their sense of developing a personal understanding of who and what you are. So,
and including marching
and
walking,
you
know, in the movement.
You were a part of a strong family tradition.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Of raising our people in the right direction.
Yeah.
That's certainly. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Dr. Jeffries.
No, I was going to say, and we had women in our community who were giants, and the Payne brothers, and some of the others were a part of the under the influence of Madeline Williams. She was the head of the Orange Maplewood NAACP, and they were training us to be strong and to struggle and have a sense of self and purpose. And in Newark, we had at 15 Elm Street, Miss Grace Baxter Fenderson, and I went down there as a 12, 13-year-old youngster. I was the president of my class at Sussex Adams School. My mother told me, go down there and join the struggle. So I knocked on her door. She saw this little black kid coming and told me he wanted to be a part of the struggle. So she took us under her wing, and that was Jewel and Bob Curvin and others. We were in the North Branch, and the Payne brothers and others were in the Orange Maplewood Branch. But we had people who were conscious of imagery, conscious of sense of purpose and direction, and they stood with us. There was a whole community of folks and institutions that helped us move in the right direction. We need to enhance that, continue that, expand that, and then continue on our way.
Let me just ask you really briefly, and we're coming to the end of the show. We've got about 5 minutes left. But I wanted your thoughts about the notion, the school-to-prison pipeline that seems to be in effect now. And their systems, talking about systems that seem to tag young people, particularly young African-American males, in their schooling in a very young age. You know, now they put kids in handcuffs nowadays for being
children. Right, the demise of our people. They say you can tell by the fourth grade whether this is going to be prison material. They've planned it. One of our great brothers, Tahisi Coates, has written an article in last month's Atlantic magazine about 250 years of enslavement in America, 90 years of Jim Crow, and he links up these things. This system that we're facing now is a part of an interrelationship of systems capabilities that have been put in place to block us. And so we, in order to deal with a system, you need a system. So we're suffering from systems imposed upon us. These are planned processes. These are not something that happenstance. These are not individuals doing a Bull Connor thing. The system in the South, said the Bull Connor, dehumanized African people, even women and old ladies and children. So we have to see the system's impact on us, and we've resisted the system, but we have to put together a system capability so that we can really develop from our own resources as opposed to just resisting the oppression that we face.
You know, it's even more important now, Dr. Jeffries, and we know that you are going to be coming on again and again, and you're also going to be doing your own show. What is it? Would you like to tell people online?
Well, yes, we're going to put an online teaching institution together so people can actually tap into this knowledge. It's an explosion of knowledge about African people, particularly over these last 50, 60, 70 years, and we've got to put it in our hands. Knowledge is power, and knowledge of African people is knowledge is African empowerment. So that, as we function in the larger world, we got to relate to all the groups, but we have to strengthen our particular foundation of our group. Otherwise, we'll be rolled over by the others. There are great families of organizations, the Asian family, the Muslim family, Arab family. they're moving on the world stage. African people are doing it too, and we have to see the connection that we have to continue to do it and heighten it. We'll be having different areas where we can put
the
knowledge
out.
People can connect with us.
Okay. Love to Dr. Ben Yekinen. We're going to be finding out about him through you also. Yes, he
is.
Live.
We'll have a special segment on Dr. Ben and Dr. Clark, twin powers of light that help to light our world.
Okay.
All right, and that's it. We're going to have to put an end to it at this particular time, but we're going to have Dr. Leonard Jeffries back on, of course. As always, it's been a pleasure and an honor, sir. Thanks to Wayne Gilman, our co-host. My name is Eric Payne, the son, the co-host on the Kay Thompson Live Show on the GoPro Radio Network. That's my mom over there, Kay Thompson.
And we'll be seeing you again next week.
Thanks.
Kay Thompson Live.
All the best, everyone.
Poncho Sanchez!